Hello and welcome back to another edition of Stampede Radio. I'm your host, Chris Blystone, and I'm joined as always by Jim Campbell and Chris Shepherd. How's it going, guys?
Hey, Chris.
Great. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing really well. So today is the show that everybody's really excited about. We're going to uplift them. We're going to raise the spirits of Colts Nation, who is just down in the dumps because they've been reading Chris Shepherd's scouting reports, and they are just, they're waiting for us to tell them it's not that bad. And I hate to disappoint you guys, but it's that bad. So we're going to go through the full game preview. We're going to get you ready for Sunday night, and we're going to be as excited about it as we can. We're going to be excited on Sunday night to watch that game. And, you know, hopefully that, you know, maybe we're going to make some predictions. Maybe we'll be wrong. We've proven to be terrible at predictions so far. So there's some wiggle room there, but we're going to go through all that stuff. We're going to go through, you know, both the offense and the defense that we're going to face against the Chiefs. And then we're going to make some bold predictions. We're going to talk about the keys to the games, what the Colts need to do in order to possibly get a win. And then we're going to talk about our giveaway that we're doing. And that's something that if you follow me on Twitter, you saw this. We're actually going to be doing a giveaway this month, and we're going to go into all the details on that and how you can win. And then we're going to get out of here. So before we do any of that stuff, we're going to go really quick through some news, because there has been some relevant injury updates, things we need to keep an eye on. And the injury report dropped today. One more will drop, and we'll know, you know, kind of who's going to be in and who's going to be out. But we're starting to get a pretty good picture at this point through Thursday of people who haven't practiced. We got Paris Campbell with his abdominal issue. He has not practiced yet this week. So two days on the injury report, no practice. That's not encouraging for him. And while I would say that stinks, also to some degree, he hasn't done a whole lot to indicate that he's going to be a big loss or gain. You'd like to see him out there, but honestly, I'm not sure how much that legitimately hurts them if he can't go, but it definitely means they're thinner at the wide receiver position. So that's not great. Clayton Gethers, still in concussion protocol, has not practiced. Man, it really seems like Clayton Gethers is not going to play. That would really surprise me. If he's not done anything through Thursday, it's going to be pretty tough to expect him to get on the field. It just is hard to get through concussion protocol if you haven't done anything by Thursday. T.Y. Hilton with his quad injury, he actually was limited in practice. So that's kind of encouraging. We talked about, I think, on the last show and I think Shepherd, you even said, and maybe it was maybe on the last show, maybe it was just in a Slack chat, that you wouldn't have a problem if T.Y. Hilton sat this week and just got right. I think there's kind of some agreement for all of us that there's part of us that just goes, you know what, just stay out, get healthy, and you got the bye week ahead. Be right by the time that the Texans game rolls around, and I can understand that as well. And then additional to him, Darius Leonard was back in limited capacity, and it looks like he may be on his way to clearing concussion protocol. Now, obviously, that is still up in the air. There's no way to really tell until they're out, they're in. And so you can't, you know, say with certainty whether they're going to be out of concussion protocol at all. Other guys that didn't practice, you got Malik Hooker, obviously didn't practice with his knee injury. He's actually anticipating being back by the Texans game. Those were his words. And we talked about that. He was talking about on the last show that he was thinking he might be back sooner. That's exciting. Whether or not he is legitimately back then is irrelevant. What is pretty exciting is that he is making good progress. And so even if he's not back by then, it looks like sooner rather than later for Hooker to come back and we could use him. Tyquan Lewis still hasn't practiced with an ankle issue, and that's problematic because he helps fill out a defensive line that's been pretty disappointing. And most importantly, and the thing that we really got to watch the most carefully, is that Marlon Mack has still not practiced. He was on the sideline today, but he was did not practice, has an ankle issue, and man, that's I don't know, that's tough. And if he's not in this game, it's going to be really difficult to replicate his production. I just have a hard time seeing anybody else able to carry the load that he could have. And then also, I guess I should mention Rocky Sin is making an appearance on here. He was a limited participant today with a hip issue. And that's a big problem because he took 100% of the start. He took 100% of the snaps at corner on defense on last Sunday's game. And they're going to need him. They can't have cornerbacks missing. They're already going to be up against it with their defensive backfield. They need all of them they can get. And so he hopefully is going to be able to get right before the weekend. A lot of names, and it does leave you a little bit, and I know I sent this tweet out, and I've seen some other people make the same observation. Week five, last year we played the Patriots on the road without a large quantity of starters on defense and dropped a bunch of them during the game, and it was not really representative of the team that we were fielding last year, but it was ugly, and there are some very obvious similarities that are kind of cropping up to that game so far that we've seen. So looks a little bit rough from the injury report standpoint, guys.
Yep.
Yeah, it really does. And it's one of those things where as a fan, it's easy for me to sit back and say like, yeah, I think these guys should sit out this week and go, you know, rest up during the bye and all that. These guys are competitors. They aren't looking at Chris Shepard's scouting reports going, man, there's no way we can win this week. So those guys are going to want to get out there and they're going to want to give it their all. They're going to want to try to win the game. So if T.Y. Hilton can play, I expect him to as a fan. I don't really want him to, but if he can play, he'll be.
That's what
there.
He's always done. So, I mean, history has shown time and time again, if he can, I have a feeling they made him not practice or play during this quad injury.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are times where they just had to tell him no, because that just seems to be the guy he is. I mean, we've referenced several times what he did last season, the back half of the season with his ankle issues. So yeah, he's no stranger to putting himself on the line to win a game.
Well, and that's what you want out of your players, but you also want that out of your coaches. You want your coaches to be the guys who will put somebody on ice when they need to be.
Exactly.
For the good of the team and the good of the person long term. And T.Y. is that guy. He's going to step up when they need him. And if he has to sit, maybe that's better for the Colts in the long run, even if it really would suck this coming week. So with that all in mind, let's go ahead and just jump right into it. We're gonna talk first about the the Chiefs offense. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure why I guess we're getting that out of the way first. It's like, you know, taking our medicine right out of the gate and trying to, you know, to get it out. So let's talk about first the part of their offense that we're maybe paying the least attention to that doesn't necessarily mean it's not gonna be a factor. But we haven't really talked much, you know, Colts fans aren't really concerned about the rushing attack. And it's not that we shouldn't be concerned about it. It's not that there isn't one or that they couldn't run the ball. It's I think if my understanding is right here, Shepard, basically, that's just not been needed. They haven't really needed to rely on the run. And it's silly, I think, to rely on the run more than you have to. And if you don't have to be balanced because you can just go down and do whatever you want to in the passing game, then the passing game is more efficient and that's the way to do it, especially if your best player is as talented as Patrick Mahomes is and you have all those weapons around him to use. It makes sense to use them, not to just run the ball so that you can say you're a balanced attacker or whatever. So not that they can't run the ball, but what should we expect out of this running game and who are the guys we need to keep an eye on?
Sure. So they are a better passing team than they are rushing. I think that if they really wanted to be, they could probably be a better rushing team than they are. But like you said, it's just not something that they don't necessarily need to be balanced to score a lot of points and win a lot of games. One thing that you will notice is that they are going to get the ball to their backs in the passing game. So, for all the, you know, maybe they're not running the ball that much, but their backs are still going to be touching the ball a lot. So LeSean McCoy, he's started the past couple games. He's 31 years old, as everyone listening probably knows. He started his career in Philadelphia with Andy Reid. He bounced over to the Buffalo Bills, and he was cut there. And Frank Gore beat out LeSean McCoy for a roster spot in Buffalo. And I'm not saying that Frank Gore is a bad player. I'm just saying he's a million years old, and he's beating out guys, younger guys, for roster spots. It's amazing. But LeSean McCoy came back to be with Andy Reid in Kansas City. And he's obviously lost a step. He's not the same guy that he was. But stylistically, he's still the same. And he's an effective player in this offense. You can expect to see him run the ball some, but he's also going to catch the ball out of the backfield. Another guy. So Damian Williams, he's been a little nicked up. I'm not sure. I didn't catch the Chiefs injury report. I'm not sure if he's going to get to go in this one. I would assume so. But Damian Williams was a guy that experts believed that he was going to carry the load this year and have a big year for Kansas City. He's split time with McCoy when they've both been healthy. But Williams hasn't really produced a lot. He's a guy to watch for. Damian Williams could be better than what he's shown so far, but he hasn't shown a lot. And then the third running back is actually, there's Damian Williams is the second, well, second, first, AB kind of a deal. The third running back is Darrell Williams. And so Darrell Williams is actually averaging, I want to say, mid 4 yards per carry this season. So he's put up good numbers when called upon. And all three of these backs have caught, I want to say, 8 or 9 passes out of the backfield. And they've all been targeted more than 10 times. So if these guys are in the game, they're going to get the ball thrown to them. It's just a matter of time before one of them does something. But again, it may not be, they may not have a ton of rushing yards, but I think that they will be able to impact the game in some way.
Well, and you would think too, with a pretty good offensive line and knowing that the passing attack is as prolific as it is, nobody's stacking the box on this team. So they're going to have room to run if they want to. And that could present a problem for the Colts because they haven't been able to stop really anybody. And this may be, I don't know, where would you rank this offensive line in terms of the teams that the Colts have played so far? As far as even if you were just rating them on run blocking, how would you rate this offensive line?
I mean, just based on what I saw, they're not a great run blocking team. I would say, they're better than the Chargers as far as run blocking is concerned, but they're not great. I'd say they're middle of the pack at best. But at the same time, like you said, if you're running into 6-man boxes, it's not real hard to open a hole.
Yeah, and the Colts are definitely not going to be stacking the box against this team. That's not going to be the game plan. And so they're going to have some success, even if it's just in those short passes. The thing I'm going to be looking for, and I hope that this is the case because he's going to get playing time, I'm going to be looking to see if Kari Willis can do what he has been able to do sometimes and sniff out those little short screen passes or swing passes and stop them for no gain, because he's done it a few times. He hasn't been perfect, and the Colts as a whole haven't been perfect. Hopefully they can get better tackling from the cornerbacks on the outside, getting off blocks and making those tackles, and eliminate the significant threat of those running backs in the passing game, because I feel like that is where both running backs and Travis Kelce getting the ball were where the Colts really got zinged badly last year. Not so much the running game from the Chiefs, but the running backs in the passing game. So maybe not a major concern defending the run against these guys. They can do it. It's not something the Colts can go to sleep on. They still need good sound tackling, but that's probably not the game plan they're putting together to attack the Colts. Although I would guess if you've watched the Colts, you probably feel like you can do pretty much whatever you want to. You probably feel like you can run the ball pretty effectively, and you probably feel like you can pass the ball pretty effectively. So you could carry a balanced game plan if one or the other thing is not working very effectively, which would be a surprise.
Right. Yeah. I think the Chiefs are just going to be able to pick their shots.
And then we're going to get into the passing offense, which obviously is, the big draw. That's what everybody's excited about with the Chiefs in terms of what they're putting out there. Patrick Mahomes looks great this season. Coincidentally and very weirdly, tied with Jacoby Brissett and Lamar Jackson with 10 touchdowns on the season, and kind of odd company for Jacoby to be in with. And then if you look at the yards, they're just not even close, but you know, but it just goes to show how really how effective our run game has been and how efficient the Colts have been. So that's, I mean, props to Frank Reich and the offense for being in that same rarefied air. But the pure production of this Chiefs team has just been phenomenal, and it's really surprising. I mean, they've got three receivers right now trending toward 1,000 yards, and their best receiver hasn't played since week one, and he played one series maybe. I mean, he had one catch, I think, so far this season before going down. And yeah, they've got three receivers trending, well, three pass catchers, because Travis Kelce is one of those that are looking to hit or exceed 12 or 1,000 yards receiving, and I believe 7 touchdowns between the three of them. That's insane. That's insane. Yeah. It just is.
Yeah. It's ridiculous how many options Mahomes has that are legitimately good.
Well, and just as a point of emphasis on how good this offense is. So Patrick Mahomes had what qualifies last week as a bad game. I mean, he did not play well. He did not throw a touchdown, and the team scored, was it 33 or 34 points? I mean, they scored 30 points as a team. This is absurd. If your quarterback doesn't throw a touchdown, you don't score 30 points. That doesn't happen unless you're, unless you're the Ravens from last year or maybe this year, and your quarterback is a running phenom. That just doesn't happen. And it's one of those things where that's, you got to look at that score and think, man, if we could get a game like that where we managed to keep Patrick Mahomes from scoring any touchdowns, we would be in really good shape. And yet you still might be completely up a creek with this team. So there are so many weapons. Who is the weapon that if you're Matt Eberflus, Shepard, who are you going to try to take out of this game to stem the flow a little bit? That's super encouraging, just so you know. I can feel the spirits of our listeners being uplifted right now as you laugh and cackle hysterically.
I mean, so all right, if I'm Matt Eberflus, like I'd fake a heart attack this week. Like I'd just stay home. Like I'd just
pull a Jalen Ramsey and tell him your wife's in labor.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything, like anything. But seriously, if I had to take one guy, if I had to pick one guy to try to take out, if I was just going to say, beat me with anybody else, good luck. I'm going to try to take out Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce is a huge matchup issue, especially the fact that the Colts right now don't have any safeties, and normally you'd try to cover him with a safety. So, I would try to bracket him, because you're not going to have big defensive backs that are really able to cover him that well. So if I have to take one guy out of the game and say, make Sammy Watkins and DeMarcus Robinson, Mecole Hardman, make those guys beat me, which by the way, they can. But if that's what I want to do, if I want to take out their best player, I'm taking out Travis Kelce. He's the biggest matchup issue one-on-one. So I'd get rid of him and make him beat me in other ways.
Well, and I think that makes a ton of sense, because while Sammy Watkins has had an excellent year, he's not been the most consistent player. Mm-hmm. And so there is a possibility that he has an off game, or that he has had a really hot start, but that he, you know, falls off at some point in production this season. Now, it's not going to matter to the Chiefs, because they're going to get Tyreek Hill back, and they don't need him to produce at the level he is now. I kind of feel that same way. I think you want to shut down in so much as you even can Travis Kelce. Now, what I think they're going to try to do, and they actually kind of have spoken to this a little bit, I mean, they're going to try to have Quincy Wilson playing some safety. And I think what they mean by that is, I think that they're going to have him playing. I think that that's exactly what they're going to use him to do. I think they're going to try to put him maybe in man coverage on Kelce and send him. That to me is the thing that makes the most sense, because he actually, you know, this is not even at all the same comparison. But if you remember back in the Snow Bowl against the Bills, and they were basically just throwing up passes to Kelvin Benjamin and letting him go get it because he was the biggest guy on the field. He was just a matchup nightmare. And they finally rotated Wilson over and put him in man coverage on Benjamin for the second half of the game. And he did pretty well in coverage. He managed to limit him pretty significantly. Wilson, I think, could do something like that. He's done a little bit of it. But to expect him to shut down somebody as ridiculous as Kelce is just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so if you can minimize it, that would be the guy. Again, same thing. That would be the guy that I'm targeting. You don't want your linebackers trying to deal with him if you can help it at all. That's not a good. I mean, there's nothing we've seen from any of our linebackers so far this season that shows us that would go any better than we would expect.
Yeah. So, I mean, Quincy Wilson hasn't played well this year. He's had a rough start to his season, but he has shown in the past that he can, like you said, he can match up against those bigger receiving threats. And I think that might be, our best bet, which, you know, when that's your best bet, God,
it's a grim prospect.
So
it really is.
Well, and one of the things that's kind of interesting, and this is why I think there's actually some hope for this defense. I don't know that again, equates to anything this week, but I think it is a thing worth mentioning just going forward is, you know, and Zach Hicks was doing a review of Rocky Sin. You should check that out. It's a very interesting film review of him on the year. And one of the things he pointed out kind of in his notes, and it may have just been via his Twitter, was that it's the veterans making mistakes, not the rookies. It's the young players are actually playing pretty sound football, and you're getting these mistakes from the veterans. Now, the good thing there is we know these veterans have played mistake-free football before, and so it's entirely possible that there are just guys who are kind of in a slump, and they're just playing bad, and they could bounce back around. It would be one thing for rookies to make those mistakes because they don't have a proven track record of not making those mistakes. That could just be who they are. But when you've seen players who played well and are now playing poorly, there is always the chance that all of a sudden something snaps back in place and they play a really good game and they look really solid. So I'm not concerned long term with this defense necessarily. Now, none of this necessarily means they're going to go out, you know, against Kansas City and play really well on defense. I think that the likelihood of them looking good, even if they play the best game that they've played defensively all season long, I think the likelihood of them looking good to the casual observer is pretty low because this is a really good offense. Even if they came out and played their best game, they're still going to give up points. It's just going to happen. But I also don't think it's out of the question to think they could play their best game of the season. I mean, maybe this wakes them up. I've wondered a little bit whether they were overlooking the Raiders looking ahead to this game and maybe got in their own heads a little bit there thinking about this game instead of the Raiders game. Obviously it burned them a lot to lose the game at Arrowhead last year, especially the way that they did. And so I'll be really interested to see what kind of performance that they put out there. But I think that the most important part of dealing with this passing offense is not on the backfield, because if you can't get to Patrick Mahomes and at least make him move off of his spot or get rid of the ball earlier or make him roll out and extend the play, if you can't even do that, he's literally just going to pick you apart regardless of what your coverage. It doesn't matter if you have the best cornerbacks in the game. If they've got to wait and follow a receiver around for 5 seconds, you're done. There's no way that you're going to even be competitive. So they've got to get pressure up front on the outsides and from Danico Autry up the middle. They've got to get guys getting into the backfield and causing at least throws to be made more quickly or checkdowns to be taken or whatever it is. You can't let them just sit back there and pick you apart.
Yeah, any quarterback in the league, any quarterback that's ever played the sport of football, if you hit him, it's going to be effective. If you can get after the quarterback, if you can get hits on him, Tom Brady, you know, you can sit back and we can argue over whether or not Tom Brady is the greatest, whatever. It's a stupid argument to have. The guy's really good. He's been really good. He's 42 years old and he doesn't look a day over 35. So he's really good. But if you hit Tom Brady, guess what? he plays terribly. That's bottom line. The problem is that the Chiefs have a really good pass blocking offensive line. And also Patrick Mahomes moves really well in the pocket. He rolls out really well. He throws on the run really Patrick. There's nothing Patrick Mahomes does that I can really sit back and say, yeah, he's not good at that. Like, there's just no aspect to his game that he's not good at something. He's good at seemingly everything. So, you know, the problem isn't just getting to him. The problem is actually getting to touch him if he's back there. He isn't an athletic quarterback. He's not a run first quarterback, but he's a better athlete than most quarterbacks in the league. He just also happens to be the best thrower in the league too. So getting hits on him is absolutely imperative. If the Colts have any hope at all to win this game, they have to hit him, which is way easier said than done.
So one of the things that we definitely, and we kind of talked about the fact that the safety position is going to be a little thin. And one of the things that the safeties are going to have to be really careful about, especially with this team, is not getting beaten deep. Because this team is going to test them that way. This is not a traditional West Coast dink and dunk kind of team. This is a weird amalgam of Andy Reid-ness that just does what they do. I mean, they have some of those kinds of dink and dunk concepts, but then they're going to take their shots, and they're going to take them at a higher rate than just about anybody else in the NFL. Maybe they do take them at a higher rate than anybody else in the NFL. I'm not certain how those numbers stack up exactly, but they're in the top two if they're not the top team. And if I remember right from your scouting report, they're taking them just about every down. They're going to take a shot of some kind because they can, because they have the weapons to do it, because they have the ability to convert, and they have a quarterback who's got the arm to make those throws and guys who can go track the ball down. So this safety group that is very young, and George Odom is very likely going to be a starting safety, which is a scary thing to think about. I am maybe the most concerned about the safeties being disciplined to stay deep and not give up big plays. That may be the biggest concern to me of anything, more so even than what Travis Kelce is going to be able to do, that these safeties are going to be able to stay disciplined and not just, give up massive plays.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing with the Chiefs offense, like you said, they consistently take deep shots. It's kind of funny because Andy Reid he's a West Coast offense guy. So they do use a lot of, you know, West Coast schemes. They're going to throw short things. They're going to want to pick up yards after the catch. But at the same time, if you've seen two or three short passing concepts in a row, you can go ahead and bet money that within the next two or three plays, they're going to throw something deep. There's going to be a bunch of deep routes, whether, you know, they run four verts or some sort of deep out route or whatever it is, they're going to throw the ball downfield. And they're doing it. It's almost like they're using the short passing concepts to set up deep passing concepts, the way people think you have to set up the play action pass by running the ball well. It's different, but it's kind of the same. They kind of lull you to sleep with the little things that get Patrick Mahomes in a rhythm, hit, you know, a couple of 4 or 5 yard plays in a row, and then all of a sudden they send everybody deep and Patrick Mahomes has time in the pocket, and one thing leads to another, and it's a 70 yard touchdown, and it's not a fluke. They do that like a lot. So, you know, having the defensive backs stay home and stay disciplined, and really, you know, try really hard not to get beat over the top, because it's coming and it will come consistently. So yeah, that's something that they've got to do too. The defensive backfield has to stay back and has to make sure they're not getting beat deep. And the defensive line has to try to get home to Patrick Mahomes. So it's, they just have to play perfectly, Chris. That's all they have to do.
Well, that doesn't seem like too much to ask. All right, guys. Well, we're gonna take a real quick break and hear from our sponsors, and then we're gonna be back. We're gonna talk about the defensive side of the ball, which is far more encouraging. So stick around for that, and we'll be right back. Okay, guys. I want to talk to you about TickPick. TickPick is a great way to get tickets to see the Colts or any other sports, music, or entertainment event of your choice. Not only will you save 10 to 15% off every ticket order, you can do it without any annoying fees at checkout. Think StubHub, but without the fees. Just head to TickPick.com, select your seats, and head to checkout. Get on your way to the next Colts game with KickPick. All right, so we're back and we're going to talk about the defensive side of the ball, which actually would be really encouraging because they're not great on defense. If the team that was pretty closely linked with them is at the bottom of the defensive ratings wasn't the Colts. Last year, that was the case. So that was actually why last year when they faced the Colts, they were a really interesting matchup. And I didn't expect the playoff game to go the way that it went, primarily because it was an interesting match. It was a pretty solid defense against a really good offense and a Colts offense that was also really good. And it looked like the Colts were the more balanced team and maybe could go in and get a win. And so that was an exciting matchup to me. This matchup doesn't look as good because it does not look like the same defense in any way. The Colts defense has struggled and doesn't give us a whole lot of reason to think they won't continue to struggle until they just kind of get their bearings a little bit better. But this defense on the Chiefs has lost some players. In the run defense, I believe they're the worst run defense in the NFL.
Real close to it, if not.
I think Miami is maybe their closest competition in run defense, and the Colts are right in the running there as well. It's those three teams, and it's not a group of teams that you want to be included in that particular group. And I would say probably it's actually been worse than that, just due to the fact that I can't imagine too many teams have the opportunity to run too consistently against the Chiefs because they're typically behind very quickly. So probably if you could hang in the game, their run defense may actually be worse because the amount of time that teams actually have to dedicate to the run before they need to start switching to the pass to keep up, I would guess is, I don't know. That's pure conjecture. I haven't looked at the numbers to see what the breakdowns are by quarter, but I would guess this team is going to struggle against a run game from the Colts. Apart from maybe Chris Jones, what names do we need to know in terms of run defense, Shepard? Who presents the biggest matchup issue for the Colts if trying to run the ball, and where should we run the ball?
So as far as the best run defender, not named Chris Jones, probably Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, he plays safety and corner, and he's probably their second best run defender. Their run defense is a pretty bare cupboard. Not a lot going on there. Their linebackers are good athletes, and they're actually pretty decent in coverage. But when you watch them play and you really focus in on the linebackers, it's almost like they're guessing where they think the ball is going to go and they run to it. And they completely lack anything resembling instinct. So Darius Leonard's lacking in a lot of things, but his instincts are really, really good. They're as good as you're going to find in the NFL. That's not true of these Chiefs linebackers. They could make a great play, tackle for a loss, and then the next play they're 15 yards away from where the hole actually is, and a back's going untouched for 20 yards. So
they're Anthony Walker.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. They're just a team full of more athletic Anthony Walkers. I'm not really necessarily concerned about their run defense. One thing that I will note, teams have run really well on the Chiefs, in part because the Chiefs have really gotten off to slow starts a lot this year. Kind of like the Colts teams during the Chuck Pagano era, where they don't really seem to want to score points until later in the game. That's kind of what these Chiefs have done, which is weird because they've still scored more points than everybody else. So once they finally get it figured out, sometime in the second quarter, they just really pour it on. But teams have tried to keep Patrick Mahomes off the field by running the ball, and they've had success. At this point for the Chiefs, it's not really even a matter of what teams are going to try to do to them. They know. That's just what's accepted. It's like those couple of years where Manning was just unstoppable. You could not stop Peyton Manning. And so teams tried their best to keep Manning off the field, and it ended up it never mattered. So they're kind of in that right now. The only difference is Patrick Mahomes is 24. So, you know, as far as the defense is concerned, the Colts will be able to move the ball on the ground until the score, you know, until the offense, the Chiefs offense dictates that they can't run the ball anymore. And then at that point, you know, they're going to have to throw the ball. But until that happens, the Colts could have a really nice day on the ground. We'll get into that more during our prediction segment. But I think the Colts will put up a large amount of yards on the ground.
And for reference, the Chiefs run defense is 31st in the league. 32nd would be the Dolphins.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, they're bad.
So that's actually a pathway to a way that the Colts could win the game is if the Chiefs were to start slow, if Frank Reich calls a very good game and this offense is super efficient, that is a way. And I'm not making a prediction here. Just again, we're talking about that, you know, the ways that you can try to, you know, to give yourself some sort of an advantage here. That is a way the Colts can get there, is if they can be super efficient on offense and aggressive. If they are scoring on every possession, if they're scoring, going down and scoring touchdowns, and this defense is not able to stop them, and the Chiefs start slow, you know, if you start scoring and you score on every drive and the other team scores on every drive, you still win. Even if the Chiefs, I mean, it, for all intents and purposes, if you get into a grinded out shootout, part of the reason why, you know, the Jaguars and the Dolphins in those games that we've referenced where they tried to, you know, play ball control. And I believe the Dolphins had like, I think it was like 45 minutes of time of possession against the Colts in the one game is absurd. They weren't scoring touchdowns. They weren't coming down and putting the ball in the end zone every time. If the Colts can do that and all that, you know, it's not a tall task. All you're doing is asking your offense to score on every drive. And, you know, what's so hard about that? If you're going down and scoring five touchdowns, I think that puts you in the range where you can say it's a possibility that the Colts could get a win. That's a big ask for a team that is missing a lot of weapons, has shown some struggles on offense, has a banged up running back. There are a lot of factors that are going to be factored in. I think that the Colts, like you said, they're going to move the ball well on the ground. But they're going to also have to be really aggressive. And that's going to include, you know, I wrote in a piece today kind of analyzing the things, and we'll get into this more into when we talk about keys of the game, but analyzing the things the Colts need to do to give themselves a chance to get a win. And one of those things is they've got to be super aggressive. They almost need to consider themselves in four down territory from the word go. I mean, if it's feasible to go for it, they need to do it, because if you're giving the ball over to the offense, you're basically saying we're now allowing Kansas City to score.
Yes.
You almost have to consider giving them the ball is giving them a score. And I know that coaches don't like to do that, and you don't want to say on defense, our defense can't stop them at all. And that doesn't put a whole lot of faith in your defense, and you may demoralize them a little bit, but let's be honest, they haven't done anything to prove that they deserve more credit than that. So if you go out and say, if we're not inside our own 20 and it's a reasonable down and distance, I mean, if it's 3rd and 7 and we're on our 40, we are going to go for it, because we know that if we give them the ball, it just means that it's a little bit shorter amount of time they have the ball before they score. Instead of running, you know, 3 minutes off the clock, they run a minute and a half off before they score, and then we got the ball back in our hands with a chance to do something with it. I think if you go in with that aggressive mindset, and maybe that's too aggressive and maybe that's a little silly and you do have to pick your shots a little bit more, but I think you have to have that kind of an aggressive mindset if you're going to stand a chance in terms of offensive play calling, because this has definitely got to be defense by way of offense. They've got to be very efficient on the offensive side of the ball, and they've got to make it count. They cannot be settling for field goals, especially not with a kicker who they haven't had play outside with any success yet this season. And they can't be settling for any of that kind of stuff. They've got to be getting 6 points every time they go down the field, and they've got to be taking risks, because they're not going to have another choice. They're just going to have to do that.
So I actually agree with you on the fourth down, how you deal with, you know, being in four down territory the whole game. The big difference that I have is that if you find yourself in 3rd and long and you're at, you know, somewhere between 3rd and 10 and 3rd and 15, you can now pick up 5 to 7 yards and that's your third down play. You don't have to try to get all 15, you know, on that third down. So if you know you're going to go for it on fourth, you're no longer, you don't have to pick up all those yards. Obviously you'd like to, if you can.
But it changes the whole complexion of how you plan downs and distances. Yep. If you know that you're going to go for it, yeah, on fourth.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it changes everything. And, you know, I don't know that Frank Reich comes out and goes for it on fourth down in the first quarter when they're, you know, on the Chiefs 30 or on, you know, our own 35 yard line or whatever. You know, it's just, I don't know that he's going to do that, but at the same time, they have to be aggressive from the get go. And they really, even if they're only down by 7 points at that point, if you're down by 7 points, you're behind the eight ball against this Chiefs team. It's just, it's only 7 points, but that 7 points is going to turn into 21 by the time you turn around. So, you know, you've got to be aggressive.
Yeah. And then we get into the pass defense, and the Colts have actually played pretty well in the past. Like, so fresh in our minds is this Raiders game. And we kind of let that override what we've seen the rest of the season. And also what we've seen, because it wasn't Andrew Luck throwing the football, has been a little bit skewed in our minds. I hear a lot of people who are a lot more down on what the offense has done so far this year than what we actually, you know, when you go back and look at it, you kind of see, okay, this is a better offense than we're giving them credit for. There have been some things that have been disappointing, and they could have been a lot better if some things go differently, but they've been pretty solid. In the passing game, there are some question marks because we don't know what we're going to have with T.Y. Hilton, and we don't really know who's going to be catching the balls that we're throwing. Now, hopefully, In the ideal world, I think 60% of your plays are run plays, because those runs are getting you, you know, 4 to 8 yards every time Marlon Mack is touching the football. If that's the case, it kind of doesn't matter who's catching the ball. And I have a feeling it's maybe Nyheim Hines, or, you know, you got Zach Pascal, who's shown that he deserves the credit of a guy who can go out and catch the ball. I think that you can look for Jack Doyle to get some catches. He's going to be involved in the game plan. And I think probably Eric Ebron doesn't have the same kind of crappy game that he had last week. I think that probably burned him. And I think, you know, you could hope that he's going to come out with a little bit of a fire to be better. I don't know that he's going to be a central part of that game plan, but, you know, you look for him to have some production. What does this team look like in terms of pass rush after losing Dee Ford, obviously Justin Houston? Are they going to present any kind of an issue for our offensive line, or is it basically same deal? Chris Jones and everybody else is just trying their best.
So Chris Jones he's a really good pass rusher, and he's going to present a problem. But I also don't want to leave out Frank Clark. So Frank Clark came over from the where was he? He was with the Seahawks. He came over from the Seattle Seahawks, and Frank Clark he's not put up big numbers so far yet this season. But he is a good pass rusher. So, you know, knowing where Frank Clark is, knowing where Chris Jones is, those two guys concern me the most. Now, of course, I say that and, you know, watch somebody like Emmanuel Ogba break out and have 2.5 sacks or something crazy. But those are the two guys that, you know, if I'm the Colts in protection meetings this week, those are the guys I want to know where those two guys are before the snap every play. And then if a guy like Emmanuel Ogba can beat me, you know, if you take Frank Clark and Chris Jones out of the game, then, you know, you're kind of going to have to take what you can get otherwise. Cause those two guys are good. I would put more emphasis on Jones, but yeah, you've got to know where Frank Clark is too.
Well, and if you can start effectively running the ball early, that slows the pass rush down. They've got to account for the run game. And if you can do that early on and establish that that's something you're going to be able to do pretty easily, it's going to slow down pass rush and give you opportunities. And it obviously allows Jacoby Brissett to play differently. In terms of coverage, so we've seen that there's a stark difference when Jacoby is playing against zone coverage versus when Jacoby is playing against man coverage. What do we expect in terms of the coverage from this team?
So they mix it up. When this team blitzes, they don't have a lot of zone blitz looks. They just don't. They're going to be in man coverage when they blitz. And then a lot of times they're going to show blitz, and then they'll drop back into a zone. So they really do a pretty good job of keeping it pretty balanced. If I had to guess, I'd say they run maybe slightly more zone, but that again, that could be the games that I watched. It could just be the, you know, I definitely don't have a full picture of it, and I didn't chart everything because that would be ridiculous and take days, just days. I feel like they probably run more zone than man coverage, but they do a good job of mixing it up. They're pretty even. They're pretty balanced.
So if T.Y. Hilton cannot play, does this passing game have any chance? How good is this defense? Are they good enough to shut down the passing attack if T.Y. Hilton's not a part of it? Or do we even need them to be there if T.Y. Hilton's not a part of it to shut down the passing game? Or can it kind of do that on its own?
So the defensive backfield, these guys are pretty average. There's nobody back there that is a true shutdown. They don't have a true shutdown corner. Juan Thornhill, he's a rookie. He's looked pretty good for a rookie. But really their safeties they're not spectacular. But, you know, you look at the Colts receiving corps, and without T.Y. Hilton, neither are they. This is the first game that I've kind of gone into, and I've looked at the tight end matchup and thought maybe the Colts didn't have a huge advantage against the linebackers and really the safeties. That could be recency bias just on my behalf too, because the last time we saw Eric Ebron play, he did not look great. It could be that's kind of clouding my vision on what could be happening there. But, you know, I think that it's really kind of an even matchup between the DBs and the receivers. And then once you mix in the tight ends too, I still kind of think it's a push. I'm not sure that the Colts have any type of an advantage in reality. Frank Wright can scheme guys open. I don't think that that's going to be an issue, but just beating them one-on-one, guys are going to go out, and on some downs they're going to win, and on other downs they're going to lose. But by and large, I don't think that the Colts have a huge advantage or disadvantage, when looking at their defensive backs compared to the Colts wide receivers.
Basically, it would be a really good game to have a breakout performance, Deion Kane.
Yeah, or anyone, really, anyone.
Well, I think if Pascal can, you know, string together several games back-to-back like he's had recently, he could have quite a bit of success from what I've seen out of the secondary and what I've read from Shepard here. So I look to see him step up again and hopefully actually put together a pretty decent performance.
Yeah, well, and he and Brissett seem to have a good rapport, and that makes a big difference. He's obviously off with some of the younger guys. I mean, you saw Campbell break off his route, and that was either a miscommunication or Campbell just losing the ball, or who knows what the issue was there. But he obviously, I don't think, realized that he was, you know, being targeted for what probably could have been a touchdown if it's hit in stride. We don't really know if he'd have been running where that ball was going to land. You see that kind of stuff happen, and you just think, okay, at this point, it has to do with chemistry. Jacoby Brissett's confidence in his receivers and in himself, that matters significantly for him. And so guys like T.Y. obviously get lots of looks. Jack Doyle gets lots of looks. Zach Pascal has a little bit of that same kind of connection. He's proven himself and proven able to make those catches. I don't care who does it. If somebody can step up and do it, that'd be great. I would really like it to be Deion Kane, because I want him to show us some of what we got so excited about and prove that we aren't all crazy for thinking that he had something. And
not all of us, Chris.
Yeah, but you're kind of a Debbie Downer, so I don't really count you.
I'm telling the truth. I'm sorry.
So
it doesn't matter anymore, Shepard.
I'm really hopeful that we see somebody step up. I'm also really hopeful that T.Y. is just able to go and that they can get him involved in the game. But obviously it starts and ends, I think, with the running game. And if that's not working, I don't know that the Colts have the weapons to have that kind of efficiency in the passing game that where they could keep up. Okay, so let's go through and each of us throw out a key to this game, something that needs to happen for the Colts to even, we won't say to win because then Shepard will just say like a comet hitting the locker room of the Chiefs or something.
I hope not. I'm going to be at the game. That seems bad for me too. I don't know.
it would be like a very precise strike. but what one thing needs to happen, and this is not, you know, what thing do you think needs to happen to give the Colts a fighting chance? Jim, what do you got?
I think we've said it several times here. Run the ball, control the clock. That's our best bet, is just keep our offense on the field as long as possible and rack up a lot of yards on the ground.
Yeah. Obviously, I agree. That's definitely, I think a huge key. And I think if that doesn't happen, it is ugly real fast.
Yeah. It's like you guys said, pretty much expect if you're giving them the ball, you are giving them a score. And that's I don't think that's even a defeatist way to look at it, because that seems to be what reality has played out. You know, they're of course not going to score on every drive, I don't think, but they've scored out of most of them.
Sure, no.
So,
well, I mean, you look at games like against the Raiders. I mean, they didn't score in three of the four quarters. They scored no points. I mean, the Raiders held them scoreless for the first, third, and fourth quarter of the game they played. And the problem is they let them score 28 in the second quarter. And that's a pretty big problem. So they've had moments where they've had some dry spells. They're not putting up absurd scores, but they also haven't played the Colts defense yet. So you don't want to give them the ball any more than you have to. And definitely establishing the run early, I think, is going to be really important. What do you think, Shepard? What's your key to the game?
So I just want to point something out really fast. They've only punted the ball 10 times, the Chiefs. They have 23 scoring drives this year, which is kind of telling of their offense. They have started slowly, but you know, they've punted the ball 10 times. They have 23 scoring drives. That's a lot. The Colts on the other side of that, they've punted the ball 13 times, and they have, is it 12? Is that right? 12 scoring drives? Yeah, I believe so. So, you know, it's kind of crazy. But if you're looking at a key to this game, in my opinion, I think Justin Houston has to come out super motivated, and he wants to make it a revenge game and say, hey, look, you guys never should have cut me. And you know, he gets hits, he gets pressures, and he gets sacks. If the Colts are going to stay in this game, he and Denico Autry really have to step up, and they have to play big. Because if they don't, like you said, if you can get to him and you can hit him, then it's a different ball game. But if that doesn't happen, then the Colts really don't stand a chance in this one. Even if they get pressure, I don't even think pressure is good enough in this game, because Patrick Mahomes, you can look at it and you can point and say, well, when Patrick Mahomes has to step up and do this and that, and he's not going to be as effective. But not as effective for Patrick Mahomes just means that he's not going to hit every single 50-yard pass. So you actually have to get hits on him. You actually have to bring him down for sacks. Pressure is it's not going to be enough in this one. You've got to hit him.
So mine kind of ties into that same thing. And my key to this game is the Colts have to do what they haven't done all season long. They have got to create turnovers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because a turnover is an opportunity for Patrick Mahomes not to score points on you. It is taking that chance away and giving your offense another opportunity. It is a must in this game. It's not optional. If the Colts don't create at least a turnover, there's no chance, none at all. They will not win. If the turnover ratio is even or is swung in the Chiefs' favor, game over. It doesn't matter what else happens. They do not have the ability to win. And they haven't been able to do that. They haven't created turnovers. Whether that comes by way of a sack fumble or whether that comes by way of punching one out of a running back, which for the record, I think is probably the most likely. And I'm not going to spell my bold prediction just yet, but ding, ding, make note, because there's one coming that's going to be in this vicinity. Whether it comes from those things, whether it comes from a pick because you've got pressure on Mahomes and he lets one go into tight coverage and a player makes a really good play. You got to find one. You got to find a way to make a takeaway, because that's the only chance that you've got. You've got to be able to swing that. And then in addition to that, and this is something that, you know, Chris Ballard talked about this in the offseason, you've got to score points off that turnover. That cannot be meaningless. You got to go down and score. And that's a swing in your favor. You have to do it. I think probably that you got to get two. I think probably to be reasonable, you've got to at least get two turnovers, and you got to get points off of them if you want a chance. So that's my big key to the game. And I think that starts with the way that the corners play. You've got to be aggressive. You can't be playing back soft and doing this. We're going to let them dink and dunk in coverage and, you know, tackle the guy in front of us, which I know is the way that this defense is designed to play, but they're going to eat you alive that way. I think you have to be more aggressive. You've got to be willing to come up and challenge at the ball. First of all, Quincy Wilson, you have to know where the ball is. You have to get turned around and locate it instead of just standing there like an idiot in the end zone while your man catches the touchdown. Like, pay attention and find the ball. You got to do that. Same thing, Rock. You got to be able to locate the ball, and you've got to make a play on it. And we've seen these guys able to do that. We know that they have it in them, but we need to see it, and they need to make it happen. I would love for that to be Kari Willis. I would love for this to be kind of a coming out party for Kari Willis, because he's been on the cusp of getting attention nationally because he has played pretty well. I would
see that as well.
I would love for him to be able to step in, because how great would it be to go even. So let's say, you know, that the Colts, you know, don't get a win, but let's say that they play admirably and it's not a blowout. And Kari Willis looks really good and gets a pick, and, you know, and the defense looks like, okay, there are some signs here. If you thought, hey, Kari Willis is going to be the guy paired up with Malik Hooker going into the back part of this season, that would be encouraging. I would leave this game feeling pretty good about that. If the defense kind of stood up and, you know, looked like they were at least competitive, they look like they could hang in there, because there are things then you could think, okay, when Malik Hooker comes back to this defense, if we were to meet this team in the playoffs, maybe we'd have a shot. If we were healthy, if we had our whole team together and we hung with them while we were beat up, and yeah, maybe they beat us by, you know, by 8 or 10 or whatever, but it wasn't like we scored a garbage time touchdown at the end to bring us that close. If it was a legit, you know, touchdown or a little more, I would feel okay with that. I wouldn't call that a moral victory. I don't think there's any such thing, but I would say that would make me feel confident about the future if you could come out with that. But you've got to have the turnovers to even make that a possibility.
Yeah, you could look at the turnovers thing in a couple different ways. On one hand, Patrick Mahomes hasn't thrown an interception this year, so you know, that's not great. On the other hand, maybe he's due. You know, maybe it's just you know, it's just going to happen.
It does stand to reason that would happen, because no matter how good you are, if you're throwing the ball a lot, you're going to throw picks. It's going to happen because things happen that you can't control. I mean, Patrick Mahomes may be great, but he may be throwing the ball to a spot his receiver doesn't go to. I mean, maybe the receiver's at the wrong spot, and it does happen. They're not as talented or as good, I don't think, as he is. They are very good, but, you know, there can be miscommunication there that is. That impacts, you know, what's going on there. It happens. So, and he's not perfect. No. He is good, but he's not perfect.
No, and that's another thing too. I didn't point this out in my scouting report because it would have taken a lot longer, but Patrick Mahomes does miss some throws, and he has had some throws where defenders have dropped interceptions this year. So it's not unlikely that he throws a pick sooner rather than later. And it may be on Sunday. If Malik Hooker were back there, I'd actually feel really good about the Colts' chances of coming away with their first one of the year, or the first one against Patrick Mahomes of the year. But Mahomes isn't perfect. He's very, very good. He is the best quarterback in the league. He's really young, but like you said, he will miss throws. He's not perfect. He's tried a couple of no-look throws, and they haven't gone as well as the highlight reel no-looks. So, you know, there's always that chance. Like you said, it's going to happen eventually, and it very well could happen this Sunday.
Well, and going back to something you just said there, Blythe Stone, is I actually started getting myself pretty hyped up about the Willis and Hooker pairing after last week's game and rewatching that game. That was, you know, the one bright spot that stood out to me. And I started to think, well, especially with Clayton Gathers having this injury, and if he shows out again this week, there's a good chance that when we do see Malik Hooker come back, which I think, but he made some statements that he thinks he'll be back for the Texans game. That would be great. I'm not going to, you know, hold my breath for that. But if that pairing in that situation would be amazing. And I'm already ready for it. Let's start it as soon as possible.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think if you put him in a situation where he can play in the box instead of having to play as much coverage, that's better for him as well. Yep. So I'm excited about it. But all right. So now it's time to to make our bold predictions. I'm not sure why we do this. Because
you tell us to.
Because we're terrible at it. And maybe it's comic relief for anybody on the other end of this thing listening to us and just hearing that we're idiots here. But so we're going to make some bold predictions. Does anybody remember their bold predictions from last week? I know whatever mine was, it was wrong. I honestly have blanked out all of that. That game was just awful. And I don't remember what I predicted, but it was not good.
I was only like partially right in that Kari Willis had a good game.
Yeah.
But didn't do the things I said he would do. He did have a tackle for a loss, I think.
Yeah, I've been, and this is not related to bold predictions, but I do have to say I've been annoyed this whole week. And I feel like very much like an old man chasing kids off his lawn because I keep seeing the Colts getting credit for a sack in the game against the Raiders. I don't know if you guys have seen this. Like they got credit for a sack. And if you look at the play that the sack took place on, it's literally Derek Carr running out of bounds, like half a yard behind the line of scrimmage and Anthony Walker just chasing him to the sideline. And Anthony Walker gets credit for a sack. And it's like, no, we didn't get a sack. We haven't had a sack in 2 weeks. And I like it to look as ugly as it actually was. Please quit giving us credit for, you know, this garbage sack that wasn't really a sack that Derek Carr just ran out short of the line of scrimmage.
I'm sorry. Now who's being the Debbie Downer?
Well, you know what? Sometimes it's necessary. I'm being Debbie Downer about things that have happened. You're predicting doom and gloom. I'm not really sure that they're quite the same thing.
Yeah. Boo me all you want. I'm right.
That's true. He is right. I came out of that game going, you know, oh, great, another game with zero sacks. And then I saw the Colts posted on Colts.com their by the numbers article. And I see that he got credited with the sack. I'm like, what? That didn't happen. I went back and watched the game. I was like, there's no sack. I mean, even in the condensed game, they show you all the sacks. You know, they show you all the good stuff, and it wasn't there. And then I had to go find out that it was because Carr ran out of bounds behind the line of scrimmage once. And then I got angry. So I'm right there with you.
So if you're watching Game Pass, you can pull up the playlist and it actually gives you the readout. And that's how I found it because I saw that he was listed with one in the game notes and I couldn't figure out. I was like, I definitely would have noticed if Anthony Walker had gotten a sack because all I noticed was him being a disappointment. And and so I went and tracked it down that way. And it's like that's not a sack. That may be a sack by letter of the law, but that should not count toward, he shouldn't get credit for it. I mean, it could be, I don't know. I guess you have to classify it as something, but he didn't even touch him. He literally was just the closest Colts player to him when he ran out of bounds. So to me, that's not a sack. There should be another way to qualify that. But anyway, props to him for his sack. It was such a hard earned sack.
So do you guys want me to bring you down on even a little bit more? So the year that Robert Mathis led the league in sacks, I want to say he had like 3 sacks that were exactly like that, where he just happened to be the guy closest to the quarterback when he ran out of bounds like 6 inches behind the line of scrimmage. So, you know, Robert Mathis's amazing season wasn't as amazing. Sorry. Wow.
Well, I don't think that we have to worry about Anthony Walker benefiting in that particular way from that.
Probably not. No.
Nope. So, bold predictions. Have you guys got some bold predictions for this game?
Yep.
Yeah.
Have either of you got one ready? Go for it, Shepard, if you've got one.
Yeah, so I think Jacoby Brissett is going to set a new career high for yards in a game.
So what is his current career high? Do you know?
It's low 300s. That's why I predicted this, because I think it's likely.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. So new career high, and that could be mid. So that could be 350 in the ballpark there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think that's probably pretty reasonable because they're very likely going to have to push the ball down the field. And the only thing that would prevent that probably from happening is if the running game is working so well that they just don't need to. that they're able to move the ball as effectively on the, like, if they, I mean, not even if they're behind, you know, in terms of anything, but if they're just, I mean, if they're able to move the ball 6 or 7 yards every time they carry, I mean, they're going to hand it off. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean,
unless you're running out of time at the end of the game.
Yeah. If you've run the ball 30 times and you haven't had a run go for less than 5 yards, yeah, you're probably not going to throw the ball, but that maybe isn't realistic.
Yeah. Okay, Jim, yeah. Have you got one?
Yeah. Well, so mine kind of hinges on the injury report because we don't know who's going to go. So if Marlon Mack does not go, I'm going to say Nyheim Hines runs for over 100 yards.
Really?
Ooh, yeah.
That's spicy.
You like that?
That's spicy because that's not the back that I would choose. I would definitely choose Jordan Wilkins because I would guess he gets the lion's share of the snaps if Marlon Mack is not playing. So that's, I like that. That's spicy. And he's definitely fast. I mean, he's got the speed to do it. And
I think he can do it.
Now, if I were you, having missed on many of these and become a chicken, I would have hedged. I would have hedged and said something like, you know, Nyheim Hines is going to have like 150 yards from scrimmage or something to give myself, because I could see him being used a lot in the past, but I like it.
So
my
deal is, if Marlon Mack did go, you know, if he is good to go, which I'm at this point,
I will allow a dual proposition here. I think that's fine.
It was still going to be Hines related. But it was going to be less spicy. It was going to be that he leads the team in receptions again.
That actually would not surprise me at all.
Yeah.
It would actually
probably not a bold prediction at all. It might happen anyway.
It might surprise me if he doesn't lead the team in receptions. The only honestly, because I just think that even if Hilton plays, I have a feeling that it's going to be less heavy usage of him than it normally would be. And he could do it. He could again re-enter something and have to sit. I mean, that very well could happen. And I could see that. I definitely think that probably.
So I'll spice it up. Happen. He'll have 10.
10 receptions.
We'll go boom. 10. Nice. I think he led with what, 6 last week or something like that.
Yeah.
So we'll kick it up a notch. Yeah.
Jim, I think that you've made 15 bold predictions, so you're bound to get one of them.
Yeah, I'm going to keep throwing them out there.
So my bold prediction is, as I alluded to earlier, I think that Darius Leonard's going to force a fumble. He did a lot of that last year. He looked ugly in his first game, and you know we've been without him for a couple of weeks. I think he's going to be on fire to come back. I think he's going to come back ready to go. He's going to be fired up. He knows that he played like crap against this team last year. He knows that he's played pretty crappy in the games that he's played so far this season. I think that he comes out ready to go, and I think he's going to force a big turnover. I don't know that means that puts him in a place where they can get a win, but I think that that's going to be a big turning point in the game, at least to keep the Colts in it. I think that Darius Leonard forces a fumble and gets the Colts an opportunity to put some points on the board.
I hope
so. I could see it. Yeah. I mean,
LeSean McCoy is the guy I'm actually visualizing. I dislike him immensely, and I would love it if he coughed up a fumble.
He carries the football like you're holding a beer. Like, I mean, he just it's amazing that he doesn't have a million more fumbles than what he actually has. He has some sort of uncanny ability to tuck it away at the last second. But yeah, that's certainly realistic to expect Darius Leonard to force a fumble on a guy that carries a ball like that.
So that's my hope. And we'll find out if my bold prediction is and if my bold prediction is any like it's gone at all, he's not going to clear concussion protocol and will not be in the game, because it seems like that's how my bold predictions always go, is that the player either ends up not being in the game or is a complete non-factor. And yeah, I think my bold prediction was that Paris Campbell was going to run an end around and get a touchdown, wasn't it? Did I repeat that same one?
You've had some form of
maybe
that.
I just need to keep predicting that until it eventually happens. It'll be like, maybe they'll just never run that play. He'll be like a Hall of Fame, end up as a Hall of Fame receiver and have never run an end around play. It'll just be like,
you should just put that as really, like a sticky post in our bold predictions in the rundown. Just leave it there and eventually it'll come true.
Just read that one off, pay the lip service for that particular prediction.
All by right. 2022, we will have seen that play, Lysone. So just have to keep going strong with this podcast.
Yep.
All right, guys, now comes the ugly part of the podcast where we're going to actually predict this game and give our score predictions. So, Shepard, go ahead and rain on our parade right out of the gate here, and we'll just be all depressed together.
I don't know. Okay, number one, I don't know why I'm raining on anyone's parade.
Because I'm the one hosting the show, that's why.
There should be no parade. Number two, I don't know why anyone would be depressed by this. If you went into this thinking that the Colts were the better team than the Chiefs, you're now Blystone, this might hurt, but you might be as bad as a Titans fan. I'm throwing it out there. Maybe.
Well, so maybe. So here's the deal, though. In football, the best team does not always win. Ask Eli Manning in the 2008 Giants.
Chris. That's true.
It is true. I'm not saying that it will happen. I'm saying it does happen on occasion. So if you go in legitimately thinking that the Colts are the better team, yes, you are a fool, and that's ridiculous.
Right.
But if you go in thinking that they have no chance exclusively for that reason, well, then you're also kind of a fool, because that's not really how football works. They do not have a good chance of winning. That is very clear. And but there's some nuance there. I think on the whole, your prediction and your thought process is very, very correct. There's just some room for a slight amount of naive hope.
Right. And so, I mean, you're not wrong. There are several things that could break the Colts' way, and they could end up eking one out in the end. Realistically, though, my prediction is that this one ends up the Chiefs scoring 41, the Colts scoring 28, and me getting ridiculed mercilessly as I walk out of the stadium wearing blue.
Yeah, that hopefully Chiefs fans are kind to you, because
No, they are not.
They're not. Okay. Well,
I'm not going to talk about my post game experience in the parking lot of the playoff game. You know, there were no charges. I'm just saying it wasn't great.
That's a shame too, because you know they had control of that game the whole time. So there's really no reason to be a jerk. I was at the comeback playoff game at Lucas Oil, and when my experience was with Colts fans, as we left, we didn't say a word to them.
Maybe
somebody was kind to them, like, "Hey, good game, guys." You know, like genuinely being nice, but otherwise it was silence.
The problem wasn't that. The problem was that some guy rear-ended me.
Oh, well, there.
I got out of the, so I had borrowed a truck. It's story time, guys. Ooh. Sorry. I got out of the truck that I had borrowed from a friend. I go back, and there's no damage, but that's beside the point. I go back, and I'm standing outside looking at, you know, this car underneath my truck, and the guy finally rolls down his window, and the first thing he says to me after rear-ending me is, "There's no damage. Get back in your car and pull up." Now, I don't know about you guys, but I saw red at that point, and there were some words exchanged. Like I said, there were no charges, but it wasn't a great experience. So we can continue with it. I hope it's better than that. That's all I'm saying.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, what is your prediction?
I actually think this will still be a fairly high scoring affair for both teams. At least I'm hoping so. So I'm going with 42-31.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Chiefs.
That seems reasonable.
You didn't have to specify that, Jim.
Oh, sorry. I just thought I'd be thorough.
Well, you technically did, because
Oh no. He's gonna do it.
So I'm actually not gonna do it. I'm actually gonna flip-flop, because I said on our podcast I am gonna try to make my actual prediction. I'm gonna do something that's actually a little bit more heartbreaking, because I have this dread that this is what's gonna happen. So I am actually predicting this game is really close. I think that the Colts show up to play. I think on defense, we get the best version of our defense. I just don't think that necessarily matters. But my prediction is 31-34 Chiefs, and Adam Vinatieri misses a field goal that could have tied the game and sent him to overtime.
Why would you make that prediction? That hurts. Yeah. That hurts just to think about.
Yeah, I just got sad. Like, it's legit sad.
It's because
and I'm the Debbie Downer now.
Because this has been something that's been in my head all this week, that we've kind of forgotten how bad he looked over the first two games, and now we're going to an outside stadium where he is not going to get a standing ovation from the crowd every time he walks out onto the field, and I'm concerned. I am legitimately concerned, because there is not anything in the world I can think of worse. I mean, losing this game is not going to be great. It would suck. But there's nothing worse than losing it because of kicking, after thinking that is far from, I mean, there's nobody right now that's thinking, yes, it's going to be kicking that makes the difference in this game. You're thinking it's the defense. And if the defense stands up and plays well and Vinatieri loses that game for them and they're heading into the bye week, I don't know how he's not gone. And that's a legitimate thing that's been on my mind this week. So that's my highly depressing, thing. We are going to end on a positive note, guys. We do have something good to talk about after this, but that's my highly depressing, bit that goes on here, is that I'm dreading that. I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that he hits that kick and they go to overtime and they beat Patrick Mahomes in Arrowhead. But you know, because that exact scenario is going to happen, or it's not. So yeah, we'll see. Anyway, guys, we're not real optimistic. So if
that was what I was expecting in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Now I will say I did predict a win in my Q&A with the Chiefs because I told them that I always pick the Colts, and I did pick the Colts in our staff picks, true to form. And I do see a pathway. Like I said, I see a pathway that is possible. I don't see any pathway where it's probable. But I posted the Any Given Sunday Inches speech. I actually linked the video in my story about ways that the Colts could win. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you should check that story out, because I don't know if it's a good football movie, but that speech is relatively okay by Pump Up Football halftime coach speech standards. Anyway. All right. So that's our, that's a wrap on the, and first of all, I guess we should have said, you know, this is a Sunday night football game. So everybody's going to get to watch this, which is fine. It's fine.
It's great. It's fine.
It's good. well, honestly, one of the things we don't know about Jacoby Brissett is really how he plays in those circumstances. How does he play when the lights are on him? Andrew Luck didn't play great. It was not often his best situation. I feel like Manning played pretty well in those night games, dependent upon, you know, whether they were playing the Patriots or not. But I think he kind of stepped up to that. And there is something to some players kind of playing better in that situation. And it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see. And the Colts will definitely build. There will be a perception about the Colts dependent upon what happens on Sunday that is going to be prevalent for a lot of the rest of the season, regardless of what happens. And that could be in the Colts' favor, or it could be, well, I think either way, it could be in the Colts' favor. They could be viewed as underdogs for a lot of the rest of the season because of what happens, or they could be really somebody, a team that impresses people if they step up and play well. So, but wanted to talk about, if you follow me on Twitter, if you follow the Stampede Blue Podcast's Twitter account, you would probably have already seen this, but we are doing a jersey giveaway, and we actually did a poll to see which jersey you'd be interested in. T.Y. Hilton was what was selected, so we're actually going to be giving away an official T.Y. Hilton jersey, and we're going to be doing that at the end of October. And the way that you can win is very simple. You do not have to purchase anything, obviously, but what you have to do to enter is we're going to actually send out a tweet, and this will go out tomorrow, and it'll be a part of when this podcast actually drops. So be watching for that when this podcast actually drops on the Stampede Blue page. So you'll be able to download this. This will probably be up at some point in the wee hours of the morning to this morning. So if you're listening to this very early, this this tweet may not be up yet, but check in the afternoon when the actual podcast article drops on Stampede Blue. When that article drops, if you retweet that tweet, follow us on Twitter. So you got to be following Stampede Blue on Twitter. You got to be following at Chris Blystone, at NFL Scheme, and at Jim Campbell 81. You have to be subscribed to the podcast, and you have to write a review of the Titans as a restaurant that sucks. 5 stars. That is imperative. Okay. Those are the things that you have to do. Pretty easy, right? I mean, and the more comical, the better. We'll throughout the month as they get added on, we will read them on the air if they're really funny. And I'm sure they will be, because I'm sure you guys are, you know, funny people, and the Titans are fun to make fun of. So, fill those out, all that stuff. Now, the way that you're going to do that, and there's going to be a link in this podcast on that story, and I'll actually put the link up on Twitter, and we'll share that out as well that way. But there'll be a link to a form where you can actually go and input your information, and it's going to ask you for screenshots of proof that you're subscribed. So you take a screenshot showing that you're subscribed to the show, and then take a screenshot of your actual review and submit that with your name and email and your Twitter handle, and send that through to us. We'll keep track of all of that stuff. And then at the end of October, we will pick and we'll reach out to you as the winner, and you'll get a T.Y. Hilton jersey, in whatever size that you need. And that's it. That's all there is to it. So, pretty excited about the opportunity to do that, guys. I hope that you're excited about the opportunity to win a T.Y. Hilton jersey. I don't have a T.Y. Hilton jersey. Jim really wants to know if he can win the contest. Yeah. And, you know, I told him he can't. So we're going to be watching very carefully to make sure Jim doesn't make up fake accounts and try to game the system a little bit or anything. But pretty excited about it, because, you know, T.Y. I don't want the jersey, because every jersey that I've bought, the player promptly retires. Or, you know, I got the Peyton Manning jersey that I have in 2010 off season, which was not great timing. I don't want a jersey, because I don't want them to leave me. so that's where we're at there, guys. Pretty excited about this contest, and we really hope that it will help us grow as a podcast, help get us out there. And so that's all you have to do to enter. All of this information is going to be posted in the story, so you don't have to be, you know, try to remember all of this stuff. The links that you need to get to do all of this will be posted. It'll be in the story. It'll be posted in every subsequent podcast throughout the month of October. And then at the end of the month, we'll pick a winner. We'll probably announce it before the show, because I'm not sure how that lines up. I haven't actually checked date wise. We'll probably throw that up on Twitter first, and then we'll obviously announce it on the show as well. And we'll get in contact with you directly to get sizes and shipping and all that good stuff taken care of. So, excited about it. Hope you are. Go check it out. Like I said, we appreciate you reaching out and your feedback. I know a couple of you have already reached out and said you've tried to write reviews and haven't been able to get it to work properly. I have no idea why that would be. So keep trying, hopefully, and appreciate you guys listening. Hope that you aren't too terribly depressed when you hear from us next time. I think regardless, and I would say that Shepard would agree with this, but I'll let him speak for himself. I think regardless of the outcome, don't take the results of this game too hard, because this is a very good team we're playing. So if we lose to this team, as we expect is probably going to be the case, it's not the end of the world. There's a whole rest of the season to go, and there are a lot of winnable games ahead of us. And this is a game that we should lose. I mean, I think everybody who was reasonable probably had this as a loss on the schedule at the beginning of the year. So don't be the person who is the sky is falling. I saw you guys coming out with the Raiders thing, and that, I mean, don't do that. That's a bad way to live. Even Shepard is not going to be, he's down on this game, but I doubt that he's like ready to pack it in and, you know, tank for Tua or whatever crap is going on with all of, you know, Miami and everything. I'll let you speak for yourself, Shepard, on that, but I think that's probably the general consensus is don't take this game too terribly seriously.
Yeah, I haven't done the study yet on the Texans, but I feel really good about the Colts going in and winning against Houston after the bye. So, yeah, no, they're going to lose this game. Like you said, there are levels to NFL teams. I truly, honestly believe in my heart of hearts that the Colts are a playoff caliber team. I do not think they're a Super Bowl caliber team. The Chiefs are a Super Bowl caliber team. So are the Patriots. So are a handful of other teams. So when the Colts lose to this team, there's no reason to think that the sky is falling. We're going to lose to a much better team that's ready to compete for a title this year, and the Colts aren't. That's okay. The Colts are still a good football team. They're just not, they're not a top three, not a top five team, and that's all right.
Well, and also, let's be honest, there's a part of me that's thinking long term and thinking I don't want this Colts team to be the team that plays the Patriots in the AFC Championship and lets them go to another freaking Super Bowl. I will be rooting so hard for the Chiefs at that point. And they're better equipped probably to deal with a team like the Patriots. So really, it's just a good against evil kind of a thing, guys. We just need the Patriots not to do well.
Exactly.
But yeah, don't get too down on this game. And obviously we're going to have a lot of time to break down different things. We're going to change up our format a little bit, obviously, in the next week, because we're going to have a bye week coming up after this show. So our format will be a little different. We're going to try some different things, and obviously a little bit of a break from Colts football for that time. And it could allow you more negative people to stew and just feel terrible about it. Don't do that. There's a lot of exciting football and good things ahead, regardless of what happens this weekend. So, until next week, guys, we're out of here. Nothing, no more damage to do. We're just looking forward to what hopefully is, if not a desirable outcome, at least an entertaining football game. Hopefully we can at least get that. And that's all we got, guys. We'll be back next time. Catch you guys later.
Later. Bye.